I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
Parkour!
I don't know. I know what parkour is, but why are you yelling parkour?
Because our guest today is Jim Butcher.
Okay.
And in one of his most recent Dresden Files books, Dresden is trapped on an island and he's underground and he's working out by doing parkour.
Oh.
And every time he leaps over something, he shouts, "Parkour!" And eventually, much later on in the book, he does this and someone says, "You know, you're not supposed to shout parkour when you do this."
Hmm.
And it was a very funny moment.
That's cool. Yeah, I feel like parkour is one of those things that's really going to define this past decade or so. Because I feel like I haven't heard a lot about parkour recently, but it was kind of a thing for a few years there. And, you know, when they do those, you know, I love the teens, whatever they're going to call this decade, I feel like parkour will be a thing, you know. Like Furbies or something.
Well, it's just a very funny moment, and it kind of goes along with our guest today.
Yeah, so we should mention that Jim Butcher is our guest today, and as you could probably tell, he's not here right now because we pre-recorded his interview. One thing that you will notice right away in the interview is we had a technical thing where very early, about 5 minutes, if that much, into the interview, Jim and I could not hear each other. We heard each other fine, and then I stopped hearing him, but Patrick and Jim heard each other just fine. So this becomes a solo Patrick interview very early on, and we didn't want to stop it and, you know, reboot it.
We were on a tight schedule.
Yes.
Like this is an official press junket kind of things where you have X amount of time with the person that you're interviewing. So like we didn't have time to suss out whether or not Patrick purposely cut out John's audio so that he could hog the entire conversation with Jim.
Yeah, I thought about that too. I'm like, did this bastard cut me out on purpose? He's like, I want Jim Butcher to myself. No, I know Patrick. But yeah, if you wonder why you stop here, I mean, I told Patrick at the beginning, you know, I'm a big Butcher fan too, but not to the extent that Patrick is. I've read 3 Butcher books, 2 Dresden books, and the Aeronauts Windlass, which I love. So I am a fan, but Patrick has read everything, I believe, or at least all the Dresden stuff and the Aeronauts Windlass. I don't know if you read
I believe books. I've read everything, yes.
Okay, so Patrick, so I would have deferred to him anyway. You would have heard way more Patrick than me regardless, but if you're wondering why you stop hearing me very early on, that is why. But from what I could tell, you know, in the first few minutes that we were speaking to him, seemed like a super cool, super nice guy, which is...
Oh, he is. He absolutely is. And I, you know, he's one of the... I have certain authors that are high up on my list for... I love how they interact and care for their fans. Mm-hmm. And Gail Carriger is up on that list. Kevin Hearn is up on that list. And Brandon Sanderson, you know, I've watched all of these folks interact, and Jim is another one. He is so enthusiastic, and he is so welcoming of his fans. And when you get to see him at a convention, he just always has a smile, and he's just very genuine. And he's definitely in the top list for me of authors really caring for and working with their fans.
And he sounds like he's a fan himself.
He is. He's super. Yeah, he's like a super geek.
Yeah, and that I think that's always such a big thing. I think the people that tend to be really successful and have passionate fan bases themselves tend to be fans of genre or whatever it may be.
And it's interesting because we can talk about the interview in past tense because we're recording this after.
Right, I know.
And one of the things at the end that John, it was kind of silly for John to sit there and not be able to hear it. So he just muted his mic and walked away. But at the end, we started talking about the Marvel movies.
Ah.
And I was like, man, we could have gone another hour just talking about the Marvel movies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I bet.
I don't know if you know, he wrote a Spider-Man book.
I did. That was on my list of questions that I was going to ask him that I couldn't ask him. Yeah. So
that was fun.
Yeah, so it's it was a pleasure to speak to him for a brief moment. I'm sure everyone's going to enjoy the interview. I'll enjoy it too, because I heard Patrick, just Patrick, for a while, and then I'm like, well, this is silly. I'm just hearing Patrick in blank space, so I'll just listen to the interview when Patrick posts it. So hope you enjoy it. Patrick and I are kind of do this intro and a little outro just to kind of bookend the interview. Before we get on to our normal picks of the week, if you enjoy these interviews with big time guests like Jim Butcher, New York Times bestselling author Jim Butcher, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. If you're already backing us, thank you so much. It really helps us to get guests like Jim. I think that's really helped raise the profile of the show a little bit and helped us. So thank you if you're already backing us. And if you're not, consider becoming one of our backers. All you have to do is go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds.
Before you do the picks of the week, I also want to say thanks to the publicist.
Yes. Yeah.
For reaching out to us and for sending me the hardcover of Briefcases, which is the book that Jim has out, because that, you know, I don't get a lot of books anymore on purpose because I feel obligated. Like, I want to do something with them and I don't have the ability to do anything really great with them anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have the time to do reviews. I don't have the time to get other people to do reviews. And so like, I don't get a lot of books anymore, and that's fine. You know, send them to John for the most part. And just to get him on the show, because John books everybody. But in this case, because I am such a fan, John said, send Patrick the book. Mm-hmm. And I was able to read 4 short stories that I had not read before, set in the Dresden universe. So that was awesome.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah.
So thanks to the publicist. And I didn't know if the publicist wanted a name mentioned or not. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So I'm being purposely cautious, not saying a name, but thank you.
Yes, thank you. All right, so now our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
I'm going to go first because I know you were hemming and hawing a bit, so I'm going to do my pick first. And it is an album. More specifically, it's an EP, a 6-song EP. As many people know, I'm a big Def Leppard fan, but this is not a Def Leppard album. This is an album by a singer-songwriter named Matt Nathanson. I like Matt Nathanson a lot too. I have 2 of his albums and I like them quite a bit. He's a very good kind of folk singer songwriter, kind of bleeds over into pop a little bit. Had a little bit of a hit a couple years ago. Anyway, a few years ago, I saw him on That Metal Show with Eddie Trunk, Eddie Trunk's metal show, even though he's not a metal artist, because when he played on The Tonight Show, he wore a That Metal Show t-shirt. So after they saw him with the That Metal Show t-shirt, they asked him to be on the show, and he came on and professed his love for metal, even though he is not a metal performer, more of a folk singer songwriter. Anyway, his new EP is 6 songs of a folk singer songwriter treatment of Def Leppard songs. So it is fantastic. It's he does 3 of the big hits. He does Pour Some Sugar on Me, Bring It On the Heartbreak, and Hysteria. But what I love is he also does 3 deep cuts. He does Coming Under Fire, Stage Fright, and Promises, which are lesser known Def Leppard songs. They weren't singles. And it's fantastic. It's a great kind of mellow, you know, acoustic guitar, piano, you know, a little bit of other instrumentation, but for the most part, an acoustic affair. So if you like good acoustic singer-songwriter stuff, this is great. And if you're also a big Def Leppard fan, it's fantastic because he really breaks it down to the song and he picked the songs that really hold up in this treatment. So I've been listening to this album a lot over the past week and I love it. It's called, I love this guy's sense of humor. So his name is Matt Nathanson. One of the big Def Leppard albums is Pyromania. So the name of this album is Pyromatia. Pyromatia. So if you like singer-songwriter stuff, acoustic stuff, and you like Def Leppard, I highly, highly recommend this album. I'm listening to it on Google Play Music, but I'm sure it's everywhere on all your Spotifys and what have you. So that is my pick, Pyromatia.
That's awesome. Did I tagged you in a video last night.
I didn't watch it. Is it the one with the 8-year-old girl playing the Led Zeppelin songs on the drums?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't watched it yet because I'd seen that in my feed anyway, but I was ready to watch it. So is that
holy
your pick?
Holy crap. No, that's not my pick.
Okay.
But I'm just throwing it out there. Holy crap.
Yeah.
She is so good. 8 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I was just blown away by that.
Yeah.
They have a camera on her, and then they also have a camera on her foot.
Right.
Because her foot is hitting the bass drum, right? And so you've got like a picture in picture, and it's just, ugh.
Now, is it a double bass drum or a single pedal? Like, is she just moving her 1 foot super fast?
One foot super fast.
That's how Bonham did it, too.
Exactly.
Like, that's the amazing thing about Bonham. You know, double bass became a thing later on where you'd have two bass drums with two pedals. Or a lot of drummers that I know that did double bass, you can just get a double pedal where it's, you know, two beaters on one bass drum. You don't necessarily need two bass drums. You can have two different beaters. And when you're doing the fast thrash beats, you kind of need that. But what's really impressive about Bonham was that Bonham did not use a double bass drum or at least I think for the most part, at least in the early stuff. So when he did these crazy fills where his foot was going nuts with all this like fast bass drum stuff, that was all single him raising and lowering his foot to like do all that quick stuff. So I'm going to go watch that because I'd love to see how fast and precise she probably moves her foot, because it's good times, bad times, right? So that has all those kind of like triplet bass drum bump, you know, that all that
yep,
kind of stuff.
Yep,
so,
yep. Right, well, it was awesome.
I will look forward to watching that. So what is your pick then, Patrick?
My pick is Deadpool 2.
Ooh, I have not seen that one yet. That's the next one I have to go see. I'm behind on the movies, but I've been gone.
I got to sneak out and see that last week, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And really, really hit the spot. I kind of needed that. It was hilarious and enjoyed it a lot. And I just want to say, Marvel movies have the end credit scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And Deadpool did them much better.
Aren't there, now I don't know if this would be a spoiler. Like, I guess I haven't seen Deadpool 2, but I saw this in one of the things. Aren't there like, so if you really shut your ears for a second, aren't there like 5 post-credit, mid-credit scenes or something like that? Isn't it ridiculous?
Yes, but what they do is they don't make you wait for all, they like put them all together.
Okay.
So like they do one,
uh-huh,
and then they do a little break, and then they just put all the rest together in a block.
Okay, I see.
And so you don't have to sit all the way through the end of the credits, which I did stupidly, thinking that there was going to be more. You just basically have to sit and watch these 5, but oh my God, John, they were so good. So good.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I'm going to maybe even try to get to that one too. With living in our new place, it is freed up Sunday. Sunday used to be laundry day where I would curse and scream and be frustrated by doing laundry all week in an apartment complex where I had to battle it out with people over washers and dryers. Now that we live in a new place where we have our own washer and dryer, I got Sunday back. So I've been going, if I go to the movies, it's, and we don't have anything else going on, I go on Sunday because it's like a free day now for me. And that's the next one. Like since we've been living in the new place, I've seen Black Panther. I saw Black Panther the week that Infinity War opened. I then saw Infinity War the week Solo opened. And then I just saw Solo this past weekend. So very odd that it took me 3 weeks to get out to see a new Star Wars movie. And I know the next time we record just the two of us, I'm pretty sure it's going to be about Solo. And not to get into all of it doing poorly at the box office and all that, but I think I am kind of a test case scenario on maybe one of the reasons why it didn't do so well. Me, one of the biggest Star Wars fans you can imagine, it had every desire to see it opening weekend, took 3 weeks to get to go see it. So I think there's something to be said about that. I think there's a lot of factors of why it has not done well, money-wise at least. But yeah, we could table that for another time,
because
then we don't need to have an hour discussion. So,
yep, because we still have a 40-minute interview with Jim Butcher to get to.
Right. So let's go to that now. So enjoy, Patrick.
Yeah.
And my hey, here's Jim Butcher.
Well, let's sort of set this up. Jim has a new hardcover out from Ace. It's called Briefcases, and I believe it was released last week.
Yes.
In all formats. And this is a collection of short stories set in the Dresden universe. And there are at least one, if not two, new ones, I want to say, written specifically for this. And then it's a collection of short stories that appeared in other anthologies and other collections.
I think there's a novella kind of brought all together too, right?
Yeah, there probably is.
Yeah.
So that's the bulk of what we talked about. But we also talked about other stuff, including Cinder Spires, Codex Alera, and on and on. So definitely worth your time. John, you want to set it up?
No, I think you did just fine.
Okay. So there you go. Take a listen, and we'll be back on the other side. And this week, John, we have a New York Times bestselling author, Jim Butcher, and I'm going to do my best not to fanboy all over his pants.
You've done a good job with that with other people that we've had on the show. Jim, thank you.
Other people are not Jim Butcher.
That's true. That's true. This is someone who you're a very, very big fan of. So, Jim, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jim's got a new book out called Briefcases, which is a collection of short fiction based in the Dresden Files universe. Jim, how did the idea for this book come along and what got it to publication?
Oh, God. It came along because I'm a nerd. And as we all know, the defining trait of all nerds is unbridled enthusiasm. So when people in the business will come up to me and they'll say, like, Jim, I'm putting together this anthology and it's in this theme. And I think I would really love to have a story from you for that. And I'll be like, oh, that's so cool. That's a great theme. That's exciting. Yeah, of course I'll give you a story. And then, you know, come about 5 minutes before the story is due, I'll realize, oh my God, I've got to write this story still and put it together. But I just hate telling people no. And I get really excited when they start sharing their ideas for their anthology with me. So I wind up with these short stories and I've got them anyway. So it's fun to put them together. And I know that there's a lot of fans who can't really afford to buy like 15 different anthologies to get all the Dresden Files short stories. So I wanted to collect them in one place after the anthologies have been out for a while, you know, so that fans who are just interested in the Dresden Files stuff could just have those stories for themselves.
Now, aren't those short story collections, those anthologies, those are normally set in a time where you can actually put a Dresden Files story? What happens when someone comes to you and says, I got this idea for Straight Out of Tombstone?
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be set in the past.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Dresden Files world is something that is, you know, I have kind of a vague knowledge of how history was shaped by the supernatural stuff. And history, for the most part, happened the same way. It's just you don't know that the supernatural guys were in the background making things happen. So I know that all these characters, and I write all these characters who are 300 years old or 600 years old or whatever. So it's not like I don't have characters who were alive during those previous points in history. So as long as I know I've got these characters, and I'll look at them and go, hey, you know what? I do want to know what Anastasia Lucio was like when she was a young hot-headed wizard. Yeah, I want to write this story because that puts her at just about exactly the right age. I really wanted it to be Anastasia Lucio with young puppy apprentice Warden Morgan. Because then I could have put Morgan in the story as well. But by the time I checked with my immersion scientists to find out if he was the right age for that, they're like, no, he won't be born for another 3 years. Like, oh, darn, I can't do that. Okay, so she's solo. I can't have her solo because she can't just have somebody running around by themselves because there's nobody to talk to. It's harder to write. So it's like, okay, I've got to give her a sidekick. All right, we're going to give her a sidekick of one of these evil horses that drowns people and name him Carl. And he just lost the deal, but because he's a fae, he did make the bargain, so now he has to serve it out. And it's like, okay, we'll start from there, and then we're going to be sitting in it. We're doing, you know, it's kind of a Straight Out of Tombstone, and we're going to be in this, you know, kind of this area of the story universe. So what can I do? Well, let's do Dodge City because I drive through Dodge City when I drive to Colorado from because I have family in Kansas City, so I go by Dodge City all the time as I'm going by it. And so then I had to go and research Dodge City, and I wound up going down a research rabbit hole for that one. But I had a lot of fun. So,
does that happen often? The research rabbit holes for you?
I try not to let it happen too often because the research rabbit hole is a very dangerous threat. I mean, it is a black hole, and if you start going down it too far, you're not going to get a lot of work done, and you sort of have to do that. The trick is to finding the right balance of being able to provide enough verisimilitude so that even people who are familiar with that area will go, yeah, okay, that works. That story actually works right here. With you know, sort of holding out enough information that the reader who doesn't much care about that part of history doesn't get bored and just wander off.
I was sitting with my mom one night watching a Western, because she loves Westerns. And there was an older one with Doc Holliday. And it got me thinking about his consumption.
Uh-huh.
And I started doing research into, what if Doc Holliday had been a vampire?
Oh, sure.
And it's like 2 weeks later, you look up.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you go, oh, I've been researching this for 2 weeks.
Gee, maybe I should actually get some writing done at some point. Yeah. And I do that too. And other professional writers do that too. That is not uncommon.
So in brief cases, the three stories that I had not, or actually four stories that I had not read and that blew me away were Cold Case, Jury Duty, Day One, and Zoo Day.
Okay.
And I want to tell you, Zoo Day, you were absolutely plucking at the heartstrings on that.
Oh, thank you very much.
That was making me go, I just kept going, aw. And I didn't realize it was going to split into three separate point of views and give us essentially the same story from three separate views. And that I thought was brilliant.
That was a lot of fun. Those little Russian doll stories like that. Those are a good time where you get a slightly different story based on who's watching it. And I had a lot of fun writing that one. Yeah, that one I had to be real careful because I had to make sure to have Mouse be the star of his own story. Because, oh my gosh, Maggie had to be the star of hers and Mouse had to be the star of his, because children and dogs steal scenes so
yes.
easy. I mean, that's why Maggie and Mouse have mostly been off stage, is because they'll steal every scene they're in.
Well, and I looked it up, and on the audiobook for this, you actually have different voice characters for the different points of view now, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen you do that before.
Yeah, they decided they wanted to do that this time. And then and in the Marcone story, Even Hand, I actually read Marcone. So I'm the audio recorder on that guy.
Well, now I got to get it and listen to it. I will say that since... Oh my gosh, I'm gonna mess up the book titles because I can't remember exactly which one. But I want to say for the last two books, I have not trusted Molly anymore.
Oh, really? Gosh.
At all.
Gosh, why?
Because, but there's a reason. There's a specific reason. There was a scene you wrote where when Harry comes back and like his fingernails or something need to be clipped and his hair needs to be clipped. And he does all that and gathers it together and he hands it to Molly and she walks away with it to destroy
it. I'm sure she burned them. I'm sure she took care of them perfectly. I'm sure that won't ever come back to haunt him.
Oh my God. But from that point on, I have not trusted her because you never showed me her burning it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't, did I?
No, you didn't, you rat bastard.
You know, it's the thing is people say that I'm really, really mean to my characters and that I like to torture my characters, and that's just not true. I like to torture my readers. It's just that I'll get in trouble if I do that, so I have to torture the characters instead and just make them feel for it. So,
oh, so rough, so very, very rough. I'm curious because I know that you have moved to the Rocky Mountains. Are you going to be going to Denver Comic Con?
Probably not this year. I'm kind of taking some time off this year for the most part. I'm getting married in the fall.
Congratulations.
So, thank you very much.
That's awesome.
And so I'm a little occupied with things. Plus I've got to get the next book done before I go off to get married. Mm-hmm. Cause my fiance doesn't want me being distracted by that sort of thing. That seems like a reasonable request. So,
it is. Unfortunately,
of course,
yeah.
You'd say that, your reader.
Hey, you know, but what though? I keep up with other things. Like I'm loving the comic books.
Oh, thank you very much, man.
I'm a huge comic book fan. I always have been, and I love the stuff that's been coming out there. I love the originals that you've done, like in between the books as well. Uh-huh. So those have been a whole lot of fun for me because it definitely gives you some visual details that I don't think you can wholly get from the books.
Yeah, not really. I mean, we had a really hard time for the first artist that we worked with trying to show him, listen, this is the difference in height between Harry and Murphy. It's like, yeah. She comes up to just below his sternum. This is how tall they should be to each other.
I got to have a conversation with Gail Carriger because she had done a limited run of manga for the Parasol Protectorate.
Uh-huh.
And if you know how manga looks, or manga, depending on how you want to pronounce it, a lot of times these are very androgynous looking characters. Well, her main character of the Parasol Protectorate, Gail will tell you, is extremely busty. And she was having that similar kind of conversation going back and forth with the artist going, no, bigger. No, bigger. No, bigger. And the artist is going, this isn't manga anymore. So I had read in one of the first books, I think you had done like a foreword or something talking about how that was such an accurate capture of what Harry looks like in your head.
Yeah. That Welcome to the Jungle. It was drawn by Ardian Sayaf, and he went on to work for, I mean, we lost him because he got offered a job, you know, working for DC and drawing Batman and stuff like that. It's like, okay, dude, go. Yeah. You need to go to that opportunity, man. But I just hated losing him because that really is, that's the Harry Dresden that's in my head.
Wow. That's awesome. And are they?
And he's a cartoon in my head. So, I mean, this whole thing is kind of an anime in my own imagination.
That makes sense. Yeah. Because you're a big comic book fan yourself.
Sure. And you can read some of the descriptions in the book, you know, as you go through the book, some of the descriptions as you read, if you stop and think, wait a minute, what if I think of this as an anime as I read this? You'll go, oh, that's so cheesy anime.
That reminds me of Butters. You wrote an entire story here from Butters' point of view.
Indeed. Yeah, the little guy I never meant to actually be an ongoing character. He was a one-shot guy when I got him started.
So I have to tell you, here's a spoiler for the story. While I was reading it, I had just had two separate people try to convince me to go back to playing World of Warcraft.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry.
You understand where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
There's a little spoiler in there. Yeah. There's a little thing about World of Warcraft in there. And I'm sitting there and I'm reading that going, this is like the third mention of World of Warcraft in the last 3 days.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Is the universe trying to tell me something?
Yeah, we're just, the universe is waving that you know, that heroin under your nose. Come back. Come back to Warcraft.
I keep telling people I can't play World of Warcraft and write. There's no way, because it just sucks up all my time. And a good friend here in Denver recently, like 3 days ago, told me that his guild was getting back into World of Warcraft and they wanted me to come back. And I'm like, no. And then my ex-girlfriend's like, hey, I'm getting back into World of Warcraft. You should come play with me. And I'm like, no. And then I read the Butter story.
Yeah, I've got my assistant is a World of Warcraft player, and she is trying to convince me to come play World of Warcraft.
I've told them that if they do launch the vanilla server, I'll give it a shot.
Huh, okay. Yeah, for me, my big game was City of Heroes. And I played Harry Dresden in City of Heroes. And the admins kept changing my name to generic hero 9916 or something like that. And then I would have to go to them and say, no, I'm actually the only person in the world who can use this name. Because I actually own the copyright. And so eventually they put a little note on my file. Hey guys, this is actually Jim Butcher. Just leave him alone. He's not hurting anybody.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That is awesome. So Butters was supposed to be a throwaway character. You needed a medical examiner for something. And he's kind of grown and become something much more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I started off, I was having this particularly gruesome morgue scene, and I wanted to leaven it with a little humor. So did you ever see the movie The Prophecy?
Yes.
There was a medical examiner in The Prophecy, and I basically just ripped him off straight off the TV screen and threw him onto my computer screen. And then I gave him a different kind of colored hair and made him Jewish, but otherwise he was kind of the same guy. Because they had this quirky little medical examiner being funny in that movie. And I just thought he was going to be there for one scene. And then a couple books down the line, I had actually been planning, this was the book Deadbeat that was coming out. It's all about necromancers.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed a sidekick for Harry. And I was thinking about it, who's going to be Harry's sidekick in this one? I knew it was going to be my first hardback. So it was going to be an entry point for new readers who had never seen the series before. So I said, okay, you know what? I need to have somebody who's kind of a noob so that he can ask all the dumb questions so that the readers don't feel dumb. Because I've got this character asking the questions that gives information that the new people need to know. But the people who are already veterans of the series won't be annoyed by it because it'll be this new character and they really liked him anyway when he showed up. So, you know, here's Butters. And then the other thing about having Butters as Harry's sidekick was, one, I knew he could ask a lot of questions because he was smart, and that would be his nature, would be to try and find out more information. And then two, he was a medical examiner, you know, which made him thematically perfectly appropriate to deal with animated corpses, and yet no use to Dresden whatsoever in the actually taking care of business department. So that just made him a perfect sidekick in to my way of thinking. And then as I was writing that book, I realized, oh, this guy's going somewhere else. And so I started planning for his future.
I just have to say that whole approach is brilliant. So you created a character to introduce the universe to new readers.
Yeah.
And you did it so smoothly. I never even thought about that. That's why or how you had created him.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's my job, man. This is what I do. If I don't do it right, I'm not gonna get any money, and I won't be able to eat. So yeah, I think a lot about how to get this done.
That's so brilliant.
Thank you very much.
That blows me away.
It's not my idea. I mean, it's a standard writing craft trick. My writing teacher called it the joy of idiocy. She said the idea is that you have an idiot around who asks questions that the reader needs to know so that the reader doesn't feel like the dummy. And when you say idiot, it doesn't mean like a moron. It just means somebody who's ignorant and doesn't understand what's going on. So they have to ask questions.
Right.
But once you have that person there, then that's how you can get information to the reader without just dispensing it in this giant info dump.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That is awesome. That totally gets away from the info dump.
Yeah, and you should always get information to the readers, if you can, in action or in conversation rather than just directly putting it into the story, because people like watching things happen and they like listening to conversations. I mean, that's just part of human nature, is you like listening to other people's conversations occasionally. People are curious, and so you kind of when you hear somebody talking, you know, in the line behind you at the movie theater, you'll kind of listen in when you're not doing anything. And that's just sort of human nature. And so you got to kind of use that to help you spoon in those lessons without them noticing they're getting lessons spooned into them.
That's awesome. You know, before we even had this interview booked, I kind of felt, I like to go back and reread books occasionally. And I write in urban fantasy myself, and I kind of wanted to go back and refresh myself on Dresden. So I started doing the audiobooks this time. Mm-hmm. And I went back to and listened to Stormfront and Full Moon.
Oh my gosh.
And then I started on Grave Peril.
Yeah, those books are so different for me listening to them than reading them.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I know exactly what I meant when I'm reading the book. You know, I know exactly what that line sounded like in my head when I wrote it. But the readers don't always, the people who are doing the reading for the recording don't always interpret it the same way. And,
right.
You know, I often, especially with Marsters, because he's an excellent actor and he does character stuff really well. He will pull humor out of things that I had not written to be humorous, but when he reads them, they're hilarious. it's almost like reading a book by a slightly, you know, that was written by a different person trying to write the same book when I'm going through listening to the audio. I love that.
Yeah. And he is really good. And for a lot of people, he's the voice, right? He's the voice of Harry Dresden.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's why I think, I mean, if I could have anything, I would want the Dresden Files to be an animated series just so we could get Marsters to do the voice.
That would be awesome.
It would.
I'd be on board with that. So what do you think, Netflix? Or?
Oh, I would love that. Yeah. Hey, Netflix, give me a call. We'll do a deal. We'll have lunch.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. What John and I were talking about last week, I brought up that I'd been listening to these, and I brought up Grave Peril, and I almost feel like Grave Peril is the actual start of the series. It's like, that's where you set so much foundational stuff that just continues on through the rest of the series.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the original deal I had. It was a 3-book deal for Stormfront, Full Moon, Grave Peril, except I hadn't actually written Grave Peril. So after, you know, but the contract got signed and suddenly it was for real, you know, the pressure was on. I think it was about 30 when I started writing it. And so that was when I went, yep, okay, you better start getting serious about this big world in this book. Otherwise people are not going to, you know, you're not going to have the momentum that you need to get a contract for more books. So yeah, so that was me looking at Grave Peril and going, oh my gosh, I've got to suck people in right here. Otherwise, this series might die right where it is.
Well, you did an excellent job, because that was one of the things we were talking about, is how so many hooks are in that book for the greater and broader universe.
Yeah, and I'm much meaner to Harry in that book too.
You are, yeah, and that was the other thing we talked about. I said, I told John, I'm like, I know what's coming in this book, and as I'm listening to it, I'm remembering. It's like, oh crap, I know exactly what's coming. And when I started to get closer and closer to that moment with Susan,
right,
I stopped listening, and I started dragging my feet, because I was like, I don't want to go through that again right now.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that to be an evil laugh.
Yes, you did.
Okay, I did. Yeah, I did.
But yeah, I'm sitting there, and so I've had it on. I've had it stopped for now, like about 2 weeks, because I didn't want to go through that. And I'm like, well, I'm gonna have to eventually, but not today.
Right.
Not today. Maybe in a week. And then it just keeps going on and on and on.
Right.
The other very interesting short story for me in this one was Jury Duty.
Okay, thank you.
These are all the ones that I had not read previously. Uh-huh. And I love when you put Harry into very ordinary kind of situations that end up being completely not ordinary.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That happened when I got called to jury duty. And and I was sitting there just intensely bored, and then I said, you know what, I've got to do something with my time here, because this is clearly a huge waste of my time at the moment. Because everybody was just sitting around wondering if we were going to be on a jury somewhere, you know, and they wound up sending me home. But the whole time I'm there, I'm like taking notes and writing things down and kind of looking around at things and getting on my phone and going to check details on, you know, about the law and so on online. And I was like, you know, I could do a story out of this. Yeah, okay, that makes today worthwhile. And now I don't have to be grumpy about being here instead of being at home working, you know.
That's hilarious. Yeah, just reading that and having Harry have to go to jury duty and not wanting to and refusing to go, and then Will telling him, look, you gotta.
Yeah.
If you want to change the system, if you want things to work the way it's supposed to, you're supposed to go.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, if only there was some way you could somehow support justice and so on. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, if there's one way to get Harry to do something, it's to guilt him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not necessarily the guilt of it. It's as much as that Will just made an argument that Harry couldn't refute very well. And Harry is the kind of guy that he's got enough integrity that if it's pointed out to him that he is wrong about something, he won't like it, but he'll acknowledge it. You know, he'll drag his feet right. And be like, fine, you're right, whatever.
Well, it was very good and very well done. And I'm trying really hard not to spoil things for people and talk too much about these stories. But those are the four that I really liked: Cold Case, Jury Duty, Day One, and Zoo Day. Cold Case, I hadn't seen any of the. I guess there's another one, Bombshells, that's from Molly's point of view.
Yeah.
And I haven't read either one of those. I really enjoyed in Side Jobs the post changes story from Murphy's point of view.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. That one, there were all these people asking me to write short stories, and it was at the end of Changes. And so Dresden was not available to be appearing right. In short stories. So I wound up writing all these stories from other characters' points of view so that they could, you know, I could kind of explore these people and see who they were doing and sort of show the reader who they were as well.
Well, and not only that, it gives us a completely different perspective on Dresden, Chicago.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Because we always see things through his eyes,
yeah.
But when we see things through Karen's eyes or somebody else's.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Harry's like this, he's like this enormous grizzly bear going through, you know, his world in terms of just the amount of effect he can have on the world around him because of his power. But when you go to somebody else, you know, who can't just kick down doors and push in bad guys' faces, you know, you go to somebody like Murphy, and she's more like a bobcat. She's got to be smart. She's got to be smart and careful, and when she does go into violence, it's got to be over the top, all the way violence, in order for her to come out of it alive. You know, and Molly has to solve her problems in a completely different way than Dresden does, for the most part. So,
right, because she has finesse, yeah, not brute
force. Yeah, she's a finesse wizard. She's a you didn't see that coming wizard. Yeah. You know, as opposed to Harry, who's got he's got the finesse of a baseball bat. You know.
And he always has, but yeah, that's the charm of the character, you know, that's part of who he is. Murphy's been one of my favorite characters throughout the series. And when I tell people about the Dresden Files and I try to get them into it, they inevitably go online and start reading things. And they're like, well, you know, I read about the first couple books and she doesn't seem to have anything to do in them. It's like, yeah, in those first couple books, I would agree. She doesn't have a whole lot to do. But from like Grave Peril on, that's when Murphy really gets into the world. She accepts what's going on.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And becomes this incredible character. One of my favorites.
In the first couple of books, she's a villain. I mean, that is her role in the first two books. I mean, when I was writing her, you know, I mean, she was Harry's boss at his contact, but she was also, it was her job to make his life worse, you know, in those books.
Mm-hmm.
She interferes in things. She distracts him from things. She demands that he adhere to rules that he can't adhere to if he wants to get things done. So, yeah, I mean, when I went to the third book, her role had changed. She had changed from villain to a supporting character. And that meant that, you know, she would be coming into the story with a much different angle and a much more emotional and human angle, as opposed to just being the I am the law sort of character.
And the way that, if I remember correctly, that you handled that is she basically got forced knowledge, right? So she couldn't ignore what was going on anymore.
Right.
And she had to make a choice to either be part of it and work against it or to walk away.
Yeah, exactly. She was part of a system whose job it was to explain why that monster was actually Old Man Witherspoon in a rubber mask, you know, and she realized that she couldn't keep doing things that way anymore if she really wanted to do what she wanted to do, which was serve and protect, you know. I mean, she kind of had the foolish idealism that she never really let go of, and that drove her to make different choices.
Yeah, you just remind me. Did you see the Scooby Natural episode of Supernatural?
No, I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list of things to do as soon as I'm done working.
Please do.
I will. Because just the fact that they made it is the most amazing thing to me.
They have embraced their fans.
Exactly.
That
is the exact truth right there.
Their episodes and the way they write things now, it all speaks to their fans and what the fans' expectations are. I kind of feel like you do the same thing now. Like you've gotten to the point where you understand your fans, you understand what they love. You give us that, but you also still give us the feels and the hurt.
Well, yeah. See, the thing is, I have to give you what you love or you won't keep coming back for me to give you the feels and the hurts. So like I said, it's you know, I don't torture my characters. I torture my readers, but you won't do that. You won't let me do that. If I don't give you things that you love in the books as well.
When I was over at SF Signal doing the podcast over there, I talked to Kate Elliott at one point and I was telling her that she's on the short list of authors who I have yelled at after reading their books. I've said that, you know, I'll be reading the book and a character does something so stupid that I just start going, no, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? That's just so stupid. Why? And I was telling her that. And when I was done, she said, thank you.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. When I was in, I learned my writing at the School of Professional Writing at University of Oklahoma. And it's got classes that are taught by actual novelists and they teach you actual practical things. And one of the things that my teacher said on the very first day of class was, all right, everybody, I'm going to tell you something you're not going to like. The business of writing is the business of manipulating people's emotions. And if you can't deal with that, you don't need to be in it. And I was furious at her. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized she was right. You know, if you read a book or watch a movie that makes you laugh when they want you to laugh and it makes you hate the people they want you to hate and you cry when you're supposed to cry, they have done their job. That is an awesome movie. That is an awesome book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you can work up that response and if you can get that emotional response out of the reader, you know, that is what you guys pay me to do. You know, that's why I do what I do.
I also remember over at SF Signal, you sent us a letter from Harry Dresden and we published it. And it was basically Harry complaining about you.
Yeah, that guy would. And if he ever met me, he'd punch me right in the nose.
It was Harry talking about how you always immortalize the worst weekends of his life and you never talk about the rest of the year where everything's kind of going fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's my job is I write about the worst weekend of Harry's year. Yeah, that's what each book is basically. It basically is. It's just the worst weekend he had that year.
Yep. So, John would kill me if I did not mention that we are both fans of the Aeronauts Windlass.
Thank you very much.
And I know that it's difficult for authors with established universes and characters that are so loved and have long series like Dresden to kind of do other things. And so I personally have really enjoyed the other things that you published, the Codex Alera and the Cinder Spires, because it shows, you know, such a different voice and such a different take on fantasy. I think I read on your website that you are planning on doing more in Cinder Spires. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. At least 3 books, and that's what I've got a contract for. And then as long as they're doing all right, then I'll do at least 6, and it might be a 9 book series. I'm not sure yet.
Oh wow.
But I mean, I'm still sort of expanding the scope of the world, and that's kind of how I know when a story idea is a good series idea. It's sort of when I do the story, and then when I'm done with the story, I can kind of look out at the edges of the map, and the edges are all fuzzy. You know, it's out there. It says here there be dragons, and the only way to find out what's there is to write the story and go there. That's one of the things that tips me off that an idea is worthy of this is worthy of a novel or a 3 novel series or something like that. There's more world out there, and I want to go explore it.
Well, yeah, and that seems like such a rich area and world to work in. Because I feel like you just barely scratched the surface with that first book.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even left the cradle. You know, it was all right at home at the home spire. And we're going to get to do so many new things in the future. I'm really looking forward to it, but I'm not letting myself get too far into it as far as enthusiasm goes, because I've got to do the next Dresden book first.
Sure. Oh, I understand.
But once that's out of the way, I'll be like, okay, Dresden, I'm done with your, you know, with your obnoxious person for a while. I'm going to go over here and play with the steampunk guys and all the cats, you know.
Well,
but then by the time I'm done, and then I'll be sick of them by the time I'm done with their book, and then it'll be like, ah, back in the saddle with Harry again, and then I'll have that enthusiasm for the next Dresden.
I don't know. I haven't read a whole lot about reception of Codex Alera. I enjoyed Codex Alera. And nice. And I felt like it was a really good story arc. I think it was 5 books, right?
6.
And 6. Okay. So, and you took it through what felt to me like a really good complete story, and it was really good fantasy, you know, like epic kind of fantasy to me. Was that like the reception? Was that the reception that you got, or?
Well, people seem to like it, and it's still in print. So, I mean, I'm still selling copies of it. So, they seem to enjoy it. But I wanted to write swords and horses fantasy when I set out to become a writer. You know, that's what I wanted to do. And you know, the Dresden Files was kind of an accident, like a really, really distracting accident that's been happening for the past 20 years. And, but you know, my first love was Tolkien-esque fantasy. And that's what I wanted to write. And so when I got the chance to write another series, that was what I wanted. I wanted a swords and horses fantasy. I still want to write my epic fantasy epic, which I will write one day when I'm a grown-up writer, you know, and I'm ready for it, which seems sort of obnoxious to me to say at this point, but it's still the way I think of it. But I want to write a big old doorstop fantasy series at some point. Maybe after I'm done with the Dresden Files, I'll get the chance to do that.
That would be awesome. That would be really awesome. I'd be there. I'd read it. John is a huge fan of Brandon Sanderson.
Oh,
and
as am I,
as you know,
he's an amazing writer.
He is. He has written those gigantic Stormlight Archive, you know, massive, massive books that you use to kill only the biggest spiders.
Exactly.
And I don't know how he does it. He is a machine. I mean, he just puts out so much.
Well, I've had investigators on it because, you know, it seemed like it would be useful to me to know how he does it. And it turns out that he's cheating. He's cloning himself. He's got like a dozen cloning chambers in his basement at home. And so that's why that's the only explanation is he's got clones helping him because, you know, I was on the tour this week and I'm stopping by bookstores and airports. And I stopped at the airport in Austin. And, it's a new book by Brandon Sanderson. And then the plane took off and landed in New York. And I'm like, it's another new book by Brandon Sanderson. Yeah, the man's amazing. You know, and he teaches. Well, I mean, not only does he maintain this pace of writing, he also teaches class. My gosh, it's disgusting.
At a university. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
If he was not just the nicest guy on the planet, I think I might hate him a little, but I can't. He's too nice a guy.
When I was involved with Pikes Peak Writers Conference and was on the board of directors for them, I was trying to get different authors to come and teach as part of that conference. And one of them was Brandon, and I had met him a couple times, once at Worldcon, and had gotten to interview him. And I asked him about that, and he's like, "Oh, I'd love to do that, but you got to talk to such and such person because I'm booked out like 2.5 years in advance."
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, holy crap.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good things to say about writing. I mean,
yeah,
he and I don't agree on absolutely everything, but I think you'd be a fool not to listen to what he has to say. He's extremely intelligent, extremely capable writer.
So obviously Briefcases is out right now. You have talked about, you know, working on the next novel. You've talked about how you'd love to do a big doorstop epic fantasy. If right now, if everything aligned correctly and you could do and write anything you wanted, what would you write?
The next Dresden book, so the fans wouldn't kill me.
You're not George R. R. Martin. We're not coming after you.
Yeah, but you know, I have to worry about these things.
If that book was written and ready, and you already sent it off to the publisher, like what would Jim love to be able to sit down and just write?
The next Cinder Spires, man. I mean, that's the great part of my job. I get to do the things that I love. You know, it's not like I'm very fortunate to be at a point where, you know, it's not like I'm writing books that I don't like. You know, I get to write the book that I want to read. That's the whole reason that got me. That's what got me into writing in the first place, was I couldn't find the book that I wanted to read, and so I started writing the book I wanted to read.
So if Lucasfilm came to you and said, "We want you to do a Star Wars book,"
well, that might be a little bit of a loaded question. As far as Lucasfilm goes, I don't think I would want to do that.
Okay.
Because you get so much oversight in that sort of situation.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think they would, I'm not sure they would, what kind of money they would be willing to pay either. I might be able to make more writing my own stuff.
So whoever owns the licensing comes to you and says, "Would you like to write a Star Trek book?"
Okay. Somebody comes to me and says, "Hey, we want you to write more Spider-Man books," for example.
There you go. Yeah.
That's something I might do. I mean, but again, if it's a corporate property, then you've got to worry about dealing with, you know, you've got to have everything approved by board meetings and stuff like that. So, I mean, I love working on my own original stuff. I mean, it would be fun to write Spider-Man, or, for example, at one point, Wizard of the Coast was thinking about rebooting the Dragonlance Chronicles.
Oh,
and
wow.
they had contacted me about the potential for that. And so I started putting together a kind of a rebooted Dragonlance Chronicles, where I was going to change one event in the very first scene of the very first book, and to just see how that rippled out and changed the history of that world. You know, I was going to make Raistlin the central character. I was going to base him on Dr. House, because that just seemed like the perfect amount of intelligence and acidic humor that would just build into a character really well. But the deal wound up falling through, but that would have been a lot of fun. I mean, I'm nerd enough to be able to go, yeah, I could really love working with Star Wars. You know, if they just said, "Hey, Jim, you know, write some Han Solo books." Okay, I'll do that.
Speaking of Spider-Man, did you see the Miles Morales trailer, the movie trailer?
No, I haven't seen it yet. Is there?
Oh, there's an animated trailer.
Yeah, the animated trailer. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that looks awesome.
It does. I want to see it.
Yeah, I do too.
And I've got to say, I think Homecoming was probably the best written of the Marvel movies so far.
I really enjoyed that one. Yeah.
Yeah. The more I watch that movie, the more I think it's the, I mean, and frankly, okay, I think I might be being egotistical here, because when I watched that movie and got to the end, there were all these things that they just kept doing things to humiliate poor Peter Parker just over and over. And I was like, man, I don't think I could have written that any better. That was amazing. That's exactly what I would have done. But I think they treated the character exactly right in that movie. And they did Spider-Man justice, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's not enough for Spider-Man to defeat his enemies. He also has to plunge into the fire and save their lives.
Yeah.
And that's who he is. And it's like, oh my God, somebody understood Spider-Man who wrote this movie. Thank you.
Yeah, he's always been one of my favorite characters, absolutely. All right. Well, Jim, believe it or not, we are out of time.
It's gone too fast.
It has. I feel like we could talk, you know, for another hour just about Marvel movies alone.
Definitely.
So Briefcases is out right now. I saw that it's out as hardcover and audio.
Yes, it is.
So that's awesome. You have been doing some signings around the country. Are you going to do any more?
At this point, I've wrapped that up. Okay. That was all last week, and we finished off in Michigan. Although I was disappointed, I saw no Dogmen while we were there. But the signing tour is done. But the book is out and available, and the audio is out and available. And I know that not everybody can afford to go out and buy a dozen different anthologies to collect all the Dresden short stories. So I really wanted to get them all together in one place, so that the folks who only cared about the Dresden stuff could just buy one book and have them.
That's awesome. All righty. So I want to thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything you'd like to tell people before I let you go?
Thank you very much, everybody, for reading my stuff and for putting up with my nonsense. But I promise I'll continue to keep writing books if you continue buying them.
That's awesome. Thanks, Jim.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Well, I hope you enjoyed Patrick's interview with Jim Butcher. I did. It was great. Patrick, I know that was a big thing for you, and I'm glad you had the opportunity to talk to him.
Yeah, no, he's great. I've gotten to talk to him before over at SF Signal and briefly at a convention. So he is just so much fun. So much fun.
Well, if this is your first time listening to Functional Nerds, I hope you enjoyed it. If you're coming to us because you got a link from somewhere about Jim Butcher, please, you know, go take a look at our archives. If you dig Jim Butcher, we have probably interviewed some other authors that you enjoy. We've interviewed Brandon Sanderson, Gail Carriger, Chuck Wendig, Merle Lafferty, Delilah Dawson, Kevin Hearn, all sorts of awesome folks that are writing great genre books. So if you like those books, go back, dig through the archives, go find your favorite authors, listen to them, subscribe to our podcast on whatever your podcatcher of choice is. And we put out the show every week. And in addition to authors, we do just lots of talk about nerd stuff and books and writing and creative things and music and all sorts of good stuff. So this may be a podcast that you like. So subscribe if you dig it. Patrick. I know this is probably running long, so we should probably just wrap it up. Anything else you want to leave our listeners with today?
Not that I can think of at the end of, or when this goes live, I've already been to Comic-Con. So I'll probably have some stories to tell in the future.
Ooh, okay.
Comic-Con, Denver Comic-Con.
Nice, nice. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us this week, and we will see you next time.
Smoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.